Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers friends? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. I'm joined once again by the great Paul Bredel. You can find him on Twitter at Paul_Bredel. Of course, you can find him on ESPN Lacrosse as well. Paul, it is great to be back chatting with you. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm excellent, Andy. Always here. Always happy to be here talking Packers football with you.
I am sad that our time, you know, week to week is coming to an end here. It'll be, I'm sure, 2025 season before you know it. I know both you and I, and I think everyone else that has covered the team is ready for a little R&R, a little bit of recharging of the batteries, just a little bit. So that stuff's important as well. But before we get there, we've got a lot to discuss as we kind of look at this team in the rear view, unfortunately, not breaking down Packers lines as we would like to be doing. But I want to start today, Paul, with what just kind of happened earlier today, which was with Matt LaFleur's season-ending press conference. I would argue, not to sort of spoil your thunder here, but that it wasn't the most it was a fairly nondescript end of season press conference. I think he probably went for like 40, 45 minutes. So wasn't that there necessarily wasn't the opportunity, but there just wasn't a ton that kind of came out of it other than Tom Clements retiring as quarterback's coach for Green Bay. But you are a smarter man than I. So was there anything else that you gleaned from that press conference or any other takeaways that you had?
Yeah, something stood out and I wrote about it right after. It's up at ESPNLacrosse.com right now. But just, you know, what's next for Jordan Love? What's next in the evolution of Jordan Love as he goes into his third season as the Green Bay Packers starter? And there was a couple notes that Matt LaFleur made throughout the press conference. One, the consistency of his footwork. He noted in that Philadelphia game specifically, just it being out of sync, out of whack. And, you know, speaking of Tom Clements, I mean, that's the foundation of success for the quarterback position. I think we've heard Tom Clements say before that he can tell whether it's an accurate throw or not by a quarterback just by watching their feet, right? That's where the accuracy starts. That's where the power comes from. The timing, the rhythm of your footwork has to be in line with your progressions. You obviously want your feet and your eyes to match as you're going through your reads as a quarterback. So really, really crucial element, fundamental technique to playing that quarterback position successfully. And Matt LaFleur said that Philadelphia game, again, it got out of whack a little bit. And then early on in the season as well, as Jordan Love was navigating those injuries and not on the practice field for the time that he missed, or even when he was a limited participant, you know, those are valuable reps that were being missed out on. And again, that footwork component of it, a crucial, crucial part to a quarterback success, started to wane a little bit. So that's one thing. The other thing that Matt LaFleur mentioned with Love is as he goes into year three, being a more vocal leader was something that he had talked about in regards to Jordan Love. And look, leadership, it's a learned trait, right? Like you just don't become, here's a big contract and the franchise quarterback, go out there and be a leader. Like that's not how it works. Everybody, I don't care what your line of work is, you have to learn that role. But what Love has in his favor to where I think Matt LaFleur wants to see him, you know, be that more vocal leader, is that emotional bank account, like within the locker room, he's incredibly respected. The guys in there absolutely love him. Matt LaFleur said he has this ability to be just one of the guys, right? Even though he's a franchise quarterback, even though the contract that he has. And then of course the work, his work ethic, the work that he puts in on a daily basis, he's built up this emotional bank account with the guys in there that if standards aren't being met, things are starting to lack a little bit, and whatever reason, whatever area, that he has that ability to say, hey, we got to pull it together. We got to do X, Y, Z, and guys are going to listen to him, right? It's, you know, if a close, you know, family member, friend has a hard conversation with you, that's obviously going to land differently than some guy you met 20 minutes ago having the same conversation. Love has built up that emotional, again, bank account within the locker room. And so I think the next thing Matt LaFleur wants to see from him is in those instances where things aren't going how they should be, that he uses that and just is more vocal, as Matt LaFleur said.
Yeah, I think especially from a quarterback position, and especially we heard from Matt on like some of the routes in this game where supposed to be run at 20 yards depth and instead it was run at 15 and it causes that interception, or at least was, you know, played a part in it. And those sort of attention to detail things, again, the wide receiver coach might say something and whatever, but like if Jordan goes to that receiver and says, if you don't run that route again at 20 yards, like the ball's not coming your way or whatever, like that's going to have a different connotation. And there's a fine line and you have to be careful because I think sometimes Rodgers strayed too far in that direction of like guys didn't necessarily feel comfortable to make mistakes or feel comfortable. And I think sometimes that doesn't always equate the best results either, but you have to find that perfect balance. And like you said, it's not something that's just inherent and innate in everybody. And that will be, I think, a step for Jordan moving forward. And doesn't necessarily have to be in that demanding period. It can be putting your hand around the guy and being like, hey man, I really need that at 15 or I need that at 20 yards, not at 15. Let's do this together, whatever. Like there can be different ways that you go about doing that. It can be in the lunchroom later in the week being like, hey, you know, just wanted to, you know, go back to that play that happened. I really need that play. Like there can be so many different ways that you can go about doing that. But I do think that it coming from Jordan and having that sort of, whether it be a demand or a conversation or whatever it might be, I do agree with Matt. I think that can hit different than if it's just the wide receiver going through or the wide receivers coach and the tape start every week going like, yep, this needs to be a 15. That's a minus. Oh, this is a good route. That's a plus. Just has that different connotation from your leader at the quarterback position.
Yeah, and I think an important distinction is vocal doesn't mean yelling. It doesn't mean loud. It's just about doing it within your own voice that's authentic in you, because that's one, that's what's going to land the most, right? When people feel it's coming from an authentic place and who you are. And LaFleur wanting Jordan Love to be more vocal doesn't mean that he's not doing these things already. It's just, you know, maybe the timing of it, again, finding his voice and how he messages what he wants to tell certain players, things like that. So again, it's a refinement, right? Just like the footwork. It's not this thing that's completely out of whack. It's just a refinement of these, core elements to playing the quarterback position.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And it's perfectly well said. The authenticity of it is going to be the most important into really getting players to buy in on that. And I think it can play a factor, which is I'm sure is why, Matt LaFleur wants him to kind of take that step. Now, as far as Tom Clements being gone, he is going to have a new quarterbacks coach working on him with that footwork and the accuracy and the decision-making and all those things that go into it. Some names that immediately come to mind, Connor Lewis, the assistant quarterbacks coach, Sean Mannion, who's an offensive assistant that probably is going to be a quarterbacks coach in this league at some point in time. And then Luke Getsy, former Packers quarterbacks coach. And then more recently, the Bears and Raiders offensive coordinator. And he was doing some consulting for Green Bay this year as well inside the building. Those would be some names that would make sense. Any initial thoughts on potential future quarterback coach?
Yeah, and I think we could all see this coming to a degree that LaFleur was planning ahead, right? Adding Mannion to the mix this last offseason, knowing that Tom Clements, you know, not knowing how long his future was going to go, but that he was getting towards the end of his career. But to me, it feels like it's going to be one of those internal candidates, either Mannion or Lewis, if I had to guess. And I think right now, again, just from a very outside perspective on the inner workings of what their roles are, I think one potential difference is LaFleur kind of parses through who to pick in that regard. Again, if he decides to go that internal route, is that Mannion, of course, has the NFL experience as a quarterback, and he's someone that LaFleur has been incredibly impressed with that he talked about. I think he coached him even when they were, I think they're both the Rams. And LaFleur spoke just very highly of Mannion and his, you know, could see him being a coach. But just one potential difference is that this last year was Mannion's first as a quarter, as, you know, being on a coaching staff, I believe. So as far as the learning curve, and it just, is he ready to step into that role where Connor Lewis has been around the team, been in a similar role to what he is right now? Is he maybe someone who's a bit more prepared to step in and be that lead coach at the quarterback position? That's potentially one differentiator that could pop up.
Yeah, I'm going to be interested to see what direction they go. It's a huge hire. It's not obviously offensive coordinator. It's not defensive coordinator, but you can make an argument that the single most important aspect to Green Bay being successful next year is just how good Jordan Love plays at quarterback. And the person that is in this role could go a long way in kind of helping him bridge that gap to being where he is now, to making that next step as a quarterback. And obviously whoever it is that's taking that job has massive shoes to fill for Tom Clements, who's been one of the best quarterback gurus in the entire league for a long period of time now. So like I said, very big shoes to fill. Good luck to whoever is taking that position, but it's a huge opportunity at the same time. And we also know, Paul, that if you do really well with Jordan Love, whoever's coming into this job, that has the ability to very quickly parlay into offensive coordinator jobs, into head coaching jobs, So again, this should be a sought after position. We'll see if Green Bay wants to go internal, if they take a look at anything external, but this is going to be a big hire for Green Bay to hopefully get Jordan Love playing at that next level. I would be remiss. I know we are now going into Wednesday as people are listening to this. We're probably reaching our statute of limitations for how much more people want to think and talk about this Packers-Eagles game from this past week. But I know you've obviously been writing on it a ton. You've had the opportunity to marinate in that loss a little bit more. What are your kind of takeaways from that game? I know we kind of know some of the key ones. The offensive, the passing game was a little bit disjointed. Defense mostly played well, self-inflicted wounds. But anything else that kind of stood out to you from that game?
Yeah, I'll just kind of tie it into some of the conversation from Matt LaFleur on Tuesday as well. The quarterback, as LaFleur says, you know, they get all the blame when the team wins, all the blame when the team loses. But it's on everyone, right? This disjointed performance that we've seen from the Packers offense. And you alluded to it earlier with those interceptions. I mean, on the Darius Slay interception, Matt LaFleur said, you know, could the ball have been maybe a little bit less inside from where it was? Yes, but the receiver's job is to better stack the defender to help create that passing lane window for Love to drop the ball in. You mentioned as well the receiver running at 15 yards on the, I think it was the Zach Bond interception, instead of being at 20 yards. Again, little miscues. The offensive line playing, of course, not having Elton Jenkins is going to hurt that unit against a front as good as the Philadelphia Eagles, but Love dealt with a ton of pressure throughout that game. Trying to run between the tackles was not working. So now you're in long and down and distance situations. And again, in no way does this absolve Jordan Love's performance, right? And Matt LaFleur said, does he need to get better? Absolutely, he does. But I think the point to just keep in mind is that it's a collective effort, right? On both units, the offensive side and the defensive side of the ball. And it's those little miscues that here or there just add up over the course of a game and leads to a play not working. And all of a sudden you're punting. And then all of a sudden, maybe the defense goes down and scores. And just like that, right? So those little details. So there isn't any, I know we always want to find what's the one thing that worked, what's the one thing that went wrong, and circle it and hone in on it. But it sounds like a number of different details that just weren't quite on track for the Packers during those final few games. And that's what they're going to have to kind of carry into the offseason and search for and try to fix. And Matt LaFleur even said after the game, you know, with the slow, in regards to the slow starts, if I had the answers, we wouldn't be doing this over and over and over again. Right. So there's going to be some searching in terms of what's, because again, we can point out the penalties, the trickle down effect of all that, but why in those moments against big games is that happening? That's the answer that they need to find out.
Well, unfortunately, Green Bay season is over, but that doesn't mean that the winning on Prize Picks needs to come to an end. The divisional round is one of the best weekends in sports, and right now on Prize Picks, you can win up to 1,000 times your money, and that's because Prize Picks is the best place to get real money action while watching the playoffs. Prize Picks also offers a variety of weekly promotions that can lead to big payouts. And don't forget that there are plenty of other sports available to play as well, and it's never a bad time to get in on the basketball action. This week, I'm going with both Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson to put on a show, Saquon Barkley to continue his ridiculous tear, and Amon-Ra St. Brown to once again dominate with multiple receptions. The best part is that you can download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup by using code PACKADAY. Prize Picks. Run your game.
It does feel, and Matt brought this up quite a bit, that, you know, we can label it as consistency if we want, but in order for this team to make that real growth, they have good players, they have talent, they can beat bad teams, where they can beat good teams. In order to beat great teams, it does feel like attention to detail in every aspect is what really needs to take that next step. And I think that goes for Matt as a coach and a play caller. I think that goes for his quarterback and his footwork and his accuracy and what he's doing in the pocket. I think that goes for the offensive line, the wide receivers and stacking corners and the depth that they're running their routes at. Again, obviously the tight ends and running backs there as well. From a defensive standpoint, there's a lot that goes into it as well. The rush depth, the rush angles, the footwork, the hands, like it's all of that attention to detail stuff. It's the stuff that we don't talk about a ton. It's not the sexiest thing to talk about. Again, whether a receiver is running, and we don't know, right? It's impossible for us to see that route that's run by, I think it was Malik Keith on that route, that like we see it run and the interception's thrown.
I can't just look at it and like be like, oh yeah, Malik Keith was supposed to run that at 20 yards. It's not something we can know unless, you know, Matt tells us. So those are things that don't necessarily get talked about as often, but it is the key, in my opinion. And I think what Matt's saying too is to, they want to become a great team, they have to master the fundamentals and the basic and the attention to detail in order to be that great team that they want to be.
Yeah. And, you know, the young team aspect of it, it's not an excuse, and LaFleur is the first to say that, but it is their reality too, as well, right? Like, we can't just totally, you know, negate that factor of it. And, you know, that's one of those things where the attention to detail over the course of a season might be one of those elements that comes with such a young team.
Yeah, I think so too. And that's going to be their next step, and they're going to have that opportunity. They're going to be a year older, a year wiser, a year more in Jeff Hafley's defense. I'm sure they're going to add some veteran help. They'll get a brand new draft class that's in there, and we'll see where this team ends up. We'll kind of talk through some of those options as we move forward here. What are your thoughts overall, 2024 campaign? I've seen the word disappointing be thrown about probably the most. Is it a failure? Is it just another step along the way? How do you kind of view this season in its totality?
I mean, that answer is going to depend on what your expectations were coming in. And the Packers themselves, like in that locker room, like the word Super Bowl was thrown around during training camp, and
they didn't hide it.
And OTAs and all of that. So in that regard, yeah, it's a disappointing season, I guess, for me and my perspective. I guess I always felt like this, I guess for me, I always felt like next year, 2025 was kind of the year where it's like, okay, and now it's Super Bowl or bust. So for me, I feel like it was a progression year, right? I know it ended poorly, but they got to 11 wins, which is two more than what they had a season ago. I think defensively, you have to be very, very excited if you're a Packers fan about Jeff Hafley's defense and just the opportunity to see that jump in that second season. We talk about players making jumps from year one to year two, but players within a scheme, that's also another element in play. The 2019 Packers offense versus the 2020 Packers offense with Matt LaFleur, I mean, those are two very, very different units those years. But the growth of the defense, you know, Xavier McKinney talked about how from week one to week 17, just the number of calls that they have within the game, the versatility that they now have to operate within the scheme because of that comfort level. And Jeff Hafley too, evolving as a play caller, making those adjustments. LaFleur said on Tuesday that he didn't anticipate the Packers playing as much cover two as they did, utilizing as many simulated pressures as they did, but that's what ended up needing to happen to get the job done defensively. And again, even with some of the unknowns at the cornerback position, like that group held up in this game against the Philadelphia Eagles. So I think just collectively, the players having that second season in Jeff Hafley's defense, Jeff Hafley himself having a full year under his belt as being a defensive coordinator, and just every single thing that comes with that, I think there's a lot of optimism around that. And then, like you said, just the overall talent on the roster, there's tons of it.
Yeah, I'm right there too. And especially on the defensive side of things, cannot say enough about Jeff Hafley and the adjustments that he was able to make in real time to this defense that, you know, I don't even think we saw the Jeff Hafley system and scheme the way that he wanted to run it, but he knew he had to adjust in real time based on not being able to consistently get there with four guys, maybe not having the horses that he wanted up front, not having the man-to-man cover guys at corner in the back end. And so he made, you know, do with what he had. And I love the fact that he is adaptable to that and being able to mix and match what he's doing on defense, figuring out the best ways to deploy those guys, putting them in positions to succeed regardless of what he has available to him. And I think that is a very, very exciting aspect moving forward. As of now, there's no Jeff Hafley coaching interviews, no rumors of him getting that. So all the signs would indicate he will be back this upcoming season. And I think that is a massive win for Green Bay, and it should be even a better defense in year two under Jeff Hafley. I do know you kind of wrote about, though, how it's going to be an offseason in search of answers for this team. What specific answers do you think that they're going to have to address as they get ready for this season that's going to be ultimately massively important in 2025?
Yeah, so I mean, the big one we spoke about earlier, and just the slow starts, right? And really dissecting what went into that play in those specific games, in those situations, because again, that's one of the biggest things that they just have to overcome right now. I also thought it was interesting on Tuesday when LaFleur was speaking, he mentioned that defenses often seem to go, I think, off script from what their character was, or what, you know, the Packers are studying, you know, the Eagles on tape, for example. They do a lot of X, Y, and Z, and then all of a sudden the game starts and now they're doing ABC against the Green Bay defense. And it sounded like that was a common occurrence in their opponents that they went up against this season. So Flores said, diving into the reason behind that, right? Yep. And I think that's a lot more self-scouting. What are we doing that teams feel the need to go off script from what they typically do to defend us this specific way? So I think that's another key element to this offseason. Because again, it's just searching for that consistency. They have the big play potential. They have the run game. But where this team, this offense, as we saw, and that was the challenge with the Eagles in that cover two shell, just forcing this offense that couldn't quite find any rhythm, sync those final games to put together a 10 play drive. So I think those are going to be where it really starts for this Packers team, is just what do we have to do on a consistency basis to find that long-term success.
I have a theory on why teams have changed it up so much against the Packers. And that theory is very specifically Matt LaFleur. I think Matt LaFleur is one of the best in the league, if not the best in the league, at knowing exactly what to nuke you with if he knows what's coming. If he knows that you're going to be in cover four, he knows how to attack it. Same thing with cover three, cover two, cover one, man-to-man, whatever it might be. If he knows what you're going to do, he does a phenomenal job of attacking that with pretty impressive precision. Now, it's not all the time. And again, there are flaws. We pretty much knew that Philly was going to play a bunch of cover two shell, and Green Bay struggled to beat it in this pass game. I'm not saying it's perfect. I'm not saying it's always the case, but he is very, very good on the whole at attacking you when he knows what's coming. And I think even the little soundbite this year of when Minnesota earlier this year played a bunch of man-to-man against them and they weren't expecting that, it really threw Green Bay off and they didn't necessarily have that easy counter for it. So I think Matt LaFleur, when prepared and knowing how to attack a team, is really, really good. I don't think Matt's quite shown the ability to maybe make those real-time adjustments quite as much. And that can be something that I think Matt can improve upon. But I think teams are, as much as possible, trying to throw Matt off, knowing that, hey, if we just do the stuff that we do, Matt's going to be prepared for it, have them ready to attack it, and we might be vulnerable. And I think they're trying to get ahead of the eight ball a little bit and just being like, we're gonna change this up and we're going to throw him completely off and make it so that he's not comfortable calling plays in this one.
And I think, too, we can look at, again, the youth of this Packers team, especially on offense at the receiver position. You know, if you've been practicing all week, all right, here's my route, here's the coverage it's going to be against, I need to be here at this time, make this move, and then all of a sudden the defense is doing something completely different, right? That can throw off the timing, the rhythm of it all. But as you get more reps, as you get more NFL experience, if the defense does switch it up and give you a different look, you know, if you've never seen it before, you're flying by the seat of your pants a little bit. But as you get more reps, more experience, and run into different coverages as you're running different routes, now you have that bank to pull from if it happens again. So maybe there isn't that, you know, as long of an adjustment period, and you can just make those moves on the fly and again, keep the timing and rhythm of the play.
I'm excited to see what that brings in 2025 and beyond. All right, a couple of quick things that I want to ask you about. Number one, Jaire Alexander, obviously the no comment sort of comments, didn't want to speak to the media, said he had nothing good to say, doesn't know if he's going to be back with the team. Your thoughts on Jaire and his future as a Green Bay Packer?
Yeah, I mean, that says a lot right there, those comments. And I mean, before that, I was of the mindset that I thought he would be back for the 2025 season. The reason I say that is because, and I believe from his cap situation, like even if the Packers were to move on from him, there's seven-ish million in savings, I think, on the salary cap if they were to move on from him. And for me, I would rather find the Packers. I'd rather have Jaire Alexander for an extra $7 million, even if I know I might only get, you know, 10, 12 games. And you still got to go into the offseason, obviously, build around that cornerback position. So I thought from that situation, it still made sense to keep him. But again, there's so much unknown with what's unfolded this year that it's just a big question mark right now in terms of what the future holds for him and the Packers. But the cornerback position, I think regardless, is going to have to be addressed this season. It's going to have to be a major need. They banked on the group that they had coming into this year. I mean, before the draft, Gutekunst was talking about the depth that they have, Matt LaFleur throughout the summer, the confidence that he has in that group. And to that group's credit, I mean, Carrington Valentine really started to progress as the season went along. I thought Keyshawn Nixon you know, had his ups and downs, but would hold his own for the most part. And like I said, the cornerback position against the Eagles, they held up in that game. So, but cornerback as a whole is going to have to be a big need for Green Bay.
Yeah, the Jaire contract is interesting in the fact that if they release him, they only save about $7 million, a little bit less than $7 million for 2025. However, they'll save about $17 million total over the course of the next two seasons. It's basically the question of, would you sign him to a one-year $17.5 million deal? It's going to hit on different years of the cap when that happens that way, but it would basically be that question. So the only savings this year is about $7 million, but you save about $10 million in 2025 or 2026 by doing that now as well. So the $17.5 million is a tougher pill for me to swallow if it was only seven. I think that is definitely a different conversation starter. But to me, where there's so much of this where it's just felt like smoke between the organization and Jaire, and we haven't quite seen the fire, we haven't quite seen this explosion, but it just feels that way. I mean, we're not talking about like tiny little breadcrumbs here. We're talking about Jaire on his way out, basically saying, I have nothing good to say and that I don't know if I'm going to be back with the team. We have Matt, every single time he's asked about Jaire, basically, you know, seeming super frustrated, him playing 50% of his games over four seasons, a suspension a year ago. Like, these are not tiny breadcrumbs. I'm not saying it can't happen, but I'm definitely would be in the, I'd be surprised if he's back camp. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about one of those other corners, Keyshawn Nixon. Let's specifically talk about him making the comments about maybe not wanting to do some kick returning. And then Matt had a funny retort today of like, yeah, I'm not sure what he meant by that. And he's going to have a meeting with him on Tuesday. So your takeaway from the entire Keyshawn conversation.
Yeah. And LaFleur also said that him and Nixon have a great conversation. And the other part I think that was missed when Keyshawn made those comments is that he talked about how happy he was to be on this team, on a team that values what he can also do defensively. So I think for me, in my trying to, you know, parse through what he said, I feel like this is more so about he wants to go out and have an off season where he's focusing on being a boundary cornerback, because that's what he wants to be in the NFL. That's what, you know, he played obviously this season for the Packers. And, you know, a year ago, he's working out as a slot cornerback, right? Yep. All of his preparation is to be a nickel cornerback. And then in week four, he's moved out to the boundary, which in Green Bay was new for Nixon, but that's where he's most comfortable. When he was with the Raiders, that's where he played mostly, was on the boundary when he in practice and on the defense defensively. So that for him, I think that's kind of how I interpreted it, right? He wants to focus on this one position because that's what he wants to be really good at. That's what he wants to contribute to this Packers team. And from the kickoff perspective, you know, the dynamic kick return, he had only 22 return attempts this year, I think to 35 the previous season. He was still effective. I mean, he averaged over 28 yards per return, which is roughly what he averaged the last 2 years when he had been an All-Pro. So we didn't see many of those, you know, 50, 60 yard returns, but overall he still picked up solid yardage. But that's how I kind of interpret the comments. He wants to focus on being a boundary cornerback.
I think you always have to parse these comments out right after. Like the emotions are still very raw for players the day after a game like that. And knowing that he had that fumble on the opening play that I'm sure he was feeling probably, you know, kind of crappy about, add on top of that, you know, he got his bell rung pretty dang good from that hit too. You know, the day after, you're probably thinking like, yeah, maybe I just need to focus on outside corner and maybe I'm not the right person for that job. And I think sometimes you have those raw emotions and then you kind of get to the off season and all of a sudden your juices start flowing again. And you're like, yeah, I want to return kicks. Are you kidding me? Of course I want to be back there returning kicks. So I'll be interested to see if we ever learn anything from that conversation between Matt and Keyshawn and what it looks like for Keyshawn. But I like his mentality. I like that he wants to attack outside corner, and we'll see if you know, he gets that opportunity and what he can bring to the table in 2025 and beyond. A couple other quick ones before we get you out of here. I know you wrote about Marshawn Lloyd, tough season for him. What's akin to a redshirt season with a lot of injuries sprinkled in. Thoughts on what he can bring to the team this upcoming season after a very injured 2024?
Yeah, Marshawn Lloyd talked on Monday as he's, you know, at the players were doing their locker clean out. And, you know, he said, as far as the growth that he experienced this season, you know, he stayed as much as you can when you're not on the field, locked in, right? In the meeting rooms, going through the game plans. He drove over to practice every day with Josh Jacobs, who it sounds like, you know, in a bit of a mentor role, helped take him under his wing to make sure he stayed locked in. And then Lloyd also said that the last couple of weeks he went down to UW-Madison, just as Christian Watson and Eric Stokes did a season ago, again, to really hone in on those soft tissue injuries, what's the cause of it. And so he said that he got a workout plan. He's already started it, again, to ensure that he can stay on the field. And he said he's just really excited for the second year and to play alongside of Josh Jacobs and to help this offense. And since the Packers drafted him, we heard Gutekunst talk about it, Matt LaFleur as well. He just brings a bit of a different dynamic to this Packers running back room. I mean, in training camp OTAs, when you saw him with the ball in his hands, his ability to change directions, the burst that he has, it is something to be seen. And also, in addition to that, you know, Matt LaFleur's talked about how they think he can contribute to the offense as a pass catcher. So I think there's just a bit of again, you add a different element to the running back room with the skill set that he brings. And I think as well, you know, just having someone else that you can lean on. Of course, Josh Jacobs is going to be, you know, your go-to option in the backfield. But if there's, you know, but if he doesn't need to have 320 carries in a season, maybe if it's 275, like over the course of the year, that can add up on a running back. But, you know, as Josh Jacobs has shown, he's more than willing to take on that role. He handles that role really well. But again, I think Lloyd, the opportunity for him just with a different dynamic to that backfield, a change of pace for this offense.
Yeah, I think so too. I think he can be a really fun running back. It's almost like having an extra draft pick this season because we really didn't get to see him at all in 2024. I also think you could potentially earmark him for a opportunity at that kick returner job if Keyshawn Nixon doesn't end up doing kick returns. So that could be an option there as well. All right, last but not least, Paul, before we get you out of here, we got 8 teams left. The Vikings are very thankfully out of the playoffs. Unfortunately, the Packers are as well. We've got 8 teams left. Who is your Super Bowl champion of the remaining 8 teams?
I feel like I got to pick the Chiefs. I mean, they just find a way. So until proven otherwise, until I'm shown otherwise, that's where I'll go.
Texans are shocking the world. They're going to beat the Chiefs this week. It's my bold prediction of the week. Texans are taking down the Chiefs. That's where I'm going. I think winner of Buffalo and Baltimore ends up winning it. I'll say Baltimore, but I'm going to say the Chiefs get upset this week in a shocker by the Houston Texans. We'll see. You never quite know. Should be a really interesting slate of games. And obviously Buffalo and Baltimore is highlighting that slate as the late Sunday game. Paul, you're the absolute best. I cannot thank you enough for all the work, time, effort, and energy that you've put in this year. You do an absolutely unbelievable job covering this team day in and day out. Your questions in the locker room, your ability to disseminate that information and put it out there for us in ways that's easily digestible, both via written and via podcast form, and obviously here with us as well, is second to none. And I cannot thank you enough for all your work all throughout the season.
That means a lot, Andy. I really do appreciate that. And I thank you for having me each of the week throughout the year. It's been fun.
I'm sure we'll get you on a couple times in the off season, but in the meantime, where can we find all of your great work?
Yeah, head over to ESPNLacrosse.com for all my written work. Follow me on Twitter at Paul_Bredel. Head over to YouTube, Paul Bredel. Multiple videos out per week. Again, discussing the Packers, my articles, all that good stuff.
Make sure to check it out. He's the best. Again, at Paul_Bredel. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for Paul and I. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.